problems. That's the issue we're going to deal with this month in this edition of Power Talk, Strategies for Lifelong Success. You know, a few weeks ago when I decided that this edition would be about solving problems, it was interesting how in life, sometimes life decides to challenge you and make sure that the teacher is applying what they know. I just left a meeting a few minutes ago that was filled with, guess what? Tons of problems. One of which, it turns out, is going to cost me about $190,000. Someone made what we call a mistake. That person no longer works with me. They made the mistake a while back, but we found out about it today. And so I got to deal with that unique problem. And I got a chance to apply the things I'm going to talk to you about on this tape. And so what's useful about what I do for a living is a chance to make sure that I apply what I know. So as I said when we first started this, that in this monthly review, when you and I are talking together, having these conversations about how we can tap more of our own personal power, I'm here as a student as well. So I can tell you today that the things I'm going to share with you worked really well for me this afternoon and will show me how to take this thing that was a problem, turn it into a bit of a challenge, and actually turn it into an opportunity. It's not resolved as of yet, but it's well on its way to be an opportunity. And I don't just mean by having a better attitude, although that certainly is useful, and we're going to talk about that as well. But also showed me how to find something in that situation that I could take advantage of, that I could utilize to create even greater results, even greater success. Now, how do you take something from just being a problem into something that you really are empowered by? Not again, just by being positive and going, I'm happy about this problem. That's not enough, although it's not a bad start, but it isn't enough by itself. And that's what we're going to basically deal with in this issue. Now, before we do that, though, I want you to think about something. What do you feel inside your body? What do you think when somebody says, we've got a problem? Or you and I are going to have to solve this problem together. Or the company's got some more problems. Or you know what? Well, by the time you get back, we're going to have to solve all these problems. For most people, when they think of a problem, they think of something that gets in their way. Something that prevents them from truly achieving what they want. Problems usually come up when we set up a goal. Because as soon as we set a goal, the only thing that prevents us from getting it are these quote-unquote obstacles. The things that get in our way. A lot of people call them stumbling blocks. And I'm sure in the short term, they look like stumbling blocks. But in the long term, I'm here to tell you that most of these things we call problems may really be stepping stones. I know it doesn't look like it at the time, and I know that sounds like just being positive, but I think there's something more here. And also, I want you and I to remember something. We're going to have to deal with problems whether we want to or not. Because the reality is, how well you'll deal with problems will probably determine the quality of your life more than almost anything else you're going to do in your lifetime. See, anybody can be positive, anybody can be up when everything is flowing, when everything's going well. The real question is, how do you do when you have to deal with these big fat problems, with these major challenges, when you give your all, when you give 1,000%, when you put yourself on the line, and it still rains on your parade, things still fall apart. That's where we get to find out what we're really made of as human beings, and that's what I think the purpose of problems are. Now, I have two questions for you I wanted to start out with here, because I asked myself these questions the other day. First one was, well, a lot of people say, well, I'm just trying to rid myself of all these problems. Well, I don't know if you can. I think the first question is, can you ever really get rid of problems? And I think the answer you and I have both agreed to is there's no way. Problems are going to be a part of our life as long as we're here. And the best study life is how it is, not how we wish it would be. We can do affirmations all day long, but we're still going to have these challenges out there that we're going to have to look at, and not just look at, but do something about if we want to shape the quality of our life and impact our personal destiny. So the second question I had is, well, if you can't get rid of problems, is there a purpose for them? Is there a reason they're there? I mean, gravity can be a pain in the tail. You know, it keeps you down here. It keeps you from doing certain things. But the reality is you can look at it in the short term and say it keeps me from doing things. Or you can say gravity is a force and it has a purpose. There's a reason it's here. Maybe what I need to do is figure out how to utilize gravity. And by the way, gravity doesn't keep you from flying. Gravity can be utilized so you can fly in a directed manner. Without any gravity at all, you'd have a tough time flying from here to where you want to go. So I think that we may want to look at there's a purpose for problems. There's a reason why our Creator created these wonderful little experiences that we've created the label of problems for. And I suggest that they are here to benefit us. And I think that what determines the quality of our life, in my own personal experience, is not how big of problems we have, because almost everybody you meet has got big problems. And you know what? If you've got small problems, then you're probably bored. You need something that's going to test you, that's going to drive you, it's going to push you forward. And what I've found, though, is that what makes the biggest difference is your attitude about the problem. That'll determine whether you get results or not. Now, when I say attitude, that word is so overused. What I really mean is when you say you have an attitude about something, what you're really saying is you have certain beliefs about why things are occurring. And I got a chance to visit with Norman Vincent Peale, the guy who wrote The Power of Positive Thinking. Incredible man. And he and I got talking about problems. In fact, I went to go see him speak, and I was in Toronto. And there was an organization there that had sponsored him. And the room was filled, 500 or 600, 700 people there. And they promised that the program would start about 7:30 p.m. Well, everybody got there, right? Got in about 7:30 and waited. At 8 o'clock, there had been no announcements, no feedback, and Norman was still not up on stage. Well, sure enough, 8:30, an hour later, still no one on stage. At 8:45, an hour and 15 minutes later, and by the way, you can imagine how people were feeling at this point. They were a little bit mad. A woman comes up on stage and says, "We're really sorry about starting late. We've had a few challenges, a few problems." And she said, "We'll be starting in about 5 or 10 minutes. Well, 9:15 shows up. We're almost 2 hours late. And the woman finally gets on stage, says, "Thank you so much for your patience." The audience was not pleased. She begins to introduce a group of people, and it's not Norman. She's decided that she wants to promote a real estate course first before this happens. You should have seen the audience. They were so upset. They were so angry. I was frustrated too, but I thought, okay, I just want to see what happens here. And it was amazing. People in the audience gave her so much pressure that she finally said, "Okay, I'm going to bring Norman on right away. I'm not going to delay anymore." She says, "Let me go get him. He's upstairs." Well, if you can imagine emotional threshold, it was in that room. People got up and left. People started yelling at this woman, calling her names. And by the way, this was like a positive people rally. And they're all screaming at each other. It was pretty amazing. All because of this thing called problems, or their idea of problems. Finally, at 9:40, a little more than 2 hours late, Dr. Norman Vincent-Beal walks in the room and gets a standing ovation. His state changes the room, fortunately. He gets up to the front and his first words are, "My, you're a positive group," which immediately creates a murmur in the crowd like you can't imagine. People, some of them are cracking up, some are kind of like, "Oh, if he only knew." And he said, "Well, you know," he noticed the crowd's response. He said, "You know, compared to some of the groups I've spoken to," he said, "you know, I did speak recently to the Morticians Association of Iowa, and you're in much more positive than they were." And he began to tease them and harass them. You know what's amazing? Within a few minutes, the problems didn't matter anymore. Because people were focused on getting what they wanted now instead of the problem. And within a short period of time, Norman began to talk about an issue called problems. I thought, gosh, how appropriate. This man really is a master. And what he talked about to people was, he said, you know, a lot of people talk about they don't want problems. They don't want to experience problems. They hate problems. And his view, and it was his response that you and I have heard a million times, was, "If you don't want any problems, I'll take you a place where there aren't any." He said, "I'll take you to the cemetery. No one there has any problems. It's a great place." In fact, he said, "Problems are a sign of life. That in essence, if you don't have any problems, you got some challenges. If you look around your life and you really don't have any big, strong problems," he said, "I suggest you go home tonight and pray to God and say, 'God, don't you trust me? Because if you don't have very many problems, maybe you're on your way out.'" I thought, what a great response. And he shared a great story that I want to pass on to you. He said there was a time when he was on the speaking circuit many, many years ago when Gene Tunney was still the world champion of boxing, heavyweight champion. And he said that he was on a panel with him at one time, and he turned to Gene and he said, "Gene, how do you get a body like that?" And Gene turned to him and said, "Do you really want to know, or are you just asking?" And Norman said, "Yeah, I'd really like to know." He said, "It's real simple. Every single day, I push against tremendous resistance, and it has sculpted my body into what you see in front of you today and made me a champion." Norman said, "You know, that's pretty interesting." He thought about it a lot, and he said, "Maybe that's how we develop spiritual muscles. Maybe that's how we develop emotional muscles. By pushing against tremendous resistance, and maybe the resistance is this thing we call problems." It was interesting to look around the room as people began to realize that problems are something they got to deal with every single day of their life, but one that very few people do with much vigor. They push against them, but they push against it tentatively, or they're angry about having to push against it. If you went to go work out, would you be angry that the weight was heavy as you pushed against it? Or would you say, "Hey, I'm utilizing this weight to sculpt myself, to create even more strength, even more power, the ability to look, feel, and behave in a way that enhances my life in every way. That's why we go and work out." Well, problems are basically the gymnasium of life. What they do is they allow us to go get a workout so that we can get bigger, we can get stronger, so that we can become more in our lives. Yeah, while you're lifting the weight, there might be a little pain. It hurts a little bit, maybe. But the only way you grow is by pushing beyond the pain. By pushing yourself beyond that process over and over and over again, what happens is what used to be painful becomes easy to deal with. Your muscle gets stronger. You become more. And what used to be hard to deal with is actually very easy to lift, very easy to push. And pretty soon you begin to have the pride of knowing you have mastered the weights. And maybe that's all that problems are, is a bunch of weights that we can utilize effectively, or we can leave them on the floor. We can ignore them. We can pretend the gymnasium doesn't exist. We can pretend that we don't have to lift the weight. But what happens when you don't use something is you lose it. And if you don't use your decision-making muscle, it gets weaker. If you don't expand and push against the problems of life, then you don't get to develop the muscle of courage, of passion, of emotion, of sensitivity, of caring. You and I have got to use problems to our advantage. So I think that in looking at problems, what we have to do is change our entire perspective and realize that they really benefit us. And all you have to do is think about your own life. Come on, haven't you had a major problem, something unbelievably terrible, frustrating, something that felt like it was going to overwhelm you, that at one day you finally handled it, and hasn't it enhanced your life as you look back on it now? I mean, think about it. Have you had a situation, something you just didn't think you could handle, and then you were surprised, you pulled it off in spite of it? And hasn't it given you greater self-esteem, greater power? Hasn't it made you more confident you can deal with almost anything else that comes up? Probably the most powerful example for me was in my own business. The first business I developed, Robbins Research. I found myself in a position where I was on the road, pushing like crazy, doing everything I knew how to do, stretching myself as far as I knew how to stretch myself, trying to give everything I could give. And I come home and find out that I got a partner that's embezzled $250,000 and run my company $758,000 in debt. That'll get your attention. That was a bit of a problem. And everybody said it was a problem that could not be solved, but I didn't buy that idea. So I have this core belief that says there's always a way if you're committed. And I found a way within a year to turn everything around. God, solving that problem created muscles that you cannot believe in me. It's like you can throw out a problem at me like the one that happened today, and I look at it and I go, okay, what do we need to do to make this thing into our advantage? How do we use it? How can we make this thing work? How can we use it today? How can we use it tomorrow? Well, one way I can use it is use it in my talk today, chatting with you and say, hey, here's something I can share with you. And I can honestly in my gut say to you, I handle it well using what I'm going to share with you. That's kind of nice. It makes me have to use this stuff. See, we can utilize anything. We're going to become masters of it. So what are the steps to really handling problems? Well, step number one is simple. Take a new look at what problems mean. See, it's the meaning that determines how we feel. If I get all upset and say, gosh, $190,000, how I have to pay this price all because this idiot screwed up a long time ago? How come this has always happened to me? Why can't I turn this thing around? Why do we always have these challenges? Hey, if I take that approach, I'm going to be angry. And I don't know about you, but if I'm really angry, I'm not usually at my most resourceful self. Haven't you found that to be true as well? I mean, when you're really upset, you get hooked into the problem and you stop focusing on the solution. Hey, listen, I can be angry all day long, but the person that was involved in my company that time has not been here, hasn't been here for 3 years. In fact, you know what's great? What's great is that I know I have a problem. I have a challenge that's become an opportunity. But knowing there's a problem there is what you want. You don't want to be one of those people that says, well, I have no problems. Or you see a problem coming up and you turn your head the other way and you try and pretend it's not there. You know, you're trying to build a garden and you see some weeds, so you turn your head and you go, there's no weeds, there's no weeds, there's no weeds. Hey, they'll come and take your garden. See, I know there's a problem. That's exciting. What's exciting about that, and I'm using exciting as a way to change the way I feel about it. I could have used a different word to describe it. But what's exciting is I hired a new CFO, a chief financial officer for that organization. And he's only been with us 3 days, and he discovered from 3 years ago a discrepancy to the tune of $190,000. That's pretty exciting. It's exciting because it means now in the future I'll have better information and I can handle problems early. I can handle them in advance. I can solve the problem before it even occurs. That's the point we want to get to. So we don't want to be upset, because when we're upset, we're no longer focused on the solution. And if we start focusing on, oh gosh, I got all these problems and therefore I must be screwing up, sometimes the problems are there to develop that muscle we talked about. Sometimes they're there because you haven't learned a lesson yet. I think what a problem is a lesson begging to be learned, begging to be utilized so that we can become more. And I certainly have learned more about the economics of that particular business in one day, and I promise you, I won't forget it. Reason is it's somewhat painful. And sometimes pain is real useful because it makes us pay more attention than when we just get pleasure. I'm a big believer that sometimes in life, when people do really well, they just party. And when they fail, or they have a challenge, or they have a major problem, they begin to ponder. And out of partying, very few things change. But out of pondering, you come up with key distinctions that cause you to grow like crazy. And I found that to be true in my life. Does that mean you should seek out problems? Well, I got a question for you. Do you have to seek them out, or do they seem to show up? Again, you can say all day long, I don't have any problems, but I think what you're doing is really kidding yourself. Deluding yourself would be a better description. Certainly they're out there. In fact, maybe that's what life's all about. Maybe what happens in life is we're going along, we start to head out for something, and we have what we've learned to deal with in our life. We have this circle of influence, all these things that we've mastered in our life, our ability to make a difference, our ability to share with others, our ability to manage our own emotions. But there's some things that seem to be just outside our comfort zone, outside what we're comfortable with dealing with. You know what I'm talking about? I don't know what it is for you. Maybe what's outside of you is public speaking. You know, you can handle all kinds of things within yourself, but get you in front of a group, ooh, that's a problem. That's outside what you're comfortable with. You don't know quite how to deal with that. Or maybe for you, it's you're able to master all these things within your business. You can public speak, but smoking. And you haven't dealt with that. And that's outside. That's a problem. And it keeps coming up because you try to get on an airline now, and now there's a problem. They don't let you smoke. They won't let you smoke on a whole long flight, 5 hours across the country. Drives you a little crazy. You got a new problem. What you really have is an opportunity, a chance to take a new look at what you do and whether or not it supports you. But the key here is, what do we do with it? See, if all you do is get angry, you get mad and say, how dare they create this problem for me? What'll happen is you won't solve the problem. And if you don't solve the problem, if you go out to deal with a problem and you hit at the edge of your comfort zone, imagine like a circle of influence, and there's an edge to it. If you retreat and don't break through your comfort zone and handle that problem, if you make everybody else wrong for creating the problem, or you get angry because you have to deal with the problem, what you'll probably do is retreat. And when you retreat, you don't get any bigger as a person. Your sphere of influence stays exactly where it is. And if you keep doing that, does the problem go away? If you just get angry? No, usually what happens is, boink, another problem shows up. And you don't deal with that. You run out to the edge of where you're comfortable and you go, oh, I don't have to deal with this. This makes me mad. Why should I have to deal with this? And you come back to your center and you don't deal with it, and boink, there's another one. Next thing you know, you're surrounded by these things called problems. Till finally you get to a threshold where your brain says, I can't take it anymore. There's too much pain here. And you push out and you break through what you're comfortable with and you handle the problem. Now, what happens to you in that moment when you handle the problem? Can you remember a major problem you handled and how you felt when you handled it? Well, what usually happens is you expand. All of a sudden, you don't just handle that problem, but who you are becomes more. And a lot of the other things that have been hanging on the edge, you handle them so easily. It's interesting, I found that in life, that for every disciplined effort, there's usually a multiple reward. That when you go out and you push to the edge, you break through, you handle this thing, all of a sudden, all these other things have been bugging you, they're so easy to deal with now because you have become more. The purpose of the problem is to expand us. The purpose of the problem is to make us more. In fact, the word problem in its original Latin root means something thrown forth. Isn't that interesting? I wonder who's doing the throwing. Maybe it's us. And by the way, when you expand, you handle this problem, and you're a much bigger person, you can deal with so much more in your life. What happens with a very short period of time? Boink, another problem shows up. It's like, I thought I got done with all these problems. But hopefully what's happened is you've dealt with that problem, and now you got a better quality of problem. So you constantly are expanding. So the key here is, and let's go through 11 quick keys, by the way. I jotted these down today as a reminder to myself of how to deal with problems. Number one, I've already mentioned, change your whole attitude towards problems. Change what problems mean to you. Turn them into a device for growing. Turn problems into your workout machine. Turn problems into your gymnasium. Turn problems into your opportunity to expand and grow. Turn problems into a lesson that's begging to be learned and begging to be utilized. Here's the second key. If you want to deal with problems in a more effective way, change the questions you ask yourself about problems. And I've already alluded to this a little bit, but let's be specific. What I mean by this is, if you walk around asking, why does this always happen to me? How come I can't turn this around? Why did this person do this to me? Two things occur. Number one, you're at the effect. You no longer feel like you're in control. And when we don't feel like we're in control of our own life, we get a little crazy, don't we? Haven't you experienced that in your life? So we've got to realize that the questions we ask ourselves also determine the way we feel and the kind of solutions we come up with. Remember, ask and you shall receive. If you say, how come I can never lose weight? You're asking a pretty lousy question, and you're gonna get a lousy answer to solve that problem. If you say, how come I can never lose weight? You basically said you never will lose weight. Your brain will say, well, how come you can never lose weight? It's simple, it's because you're a pig, right? You know, your brain's gonna start cracking up. If you say, how come I can't turn things around? Your brain will come up with answers, because you're not smart. You can't figure it out. You're not good enough. A great way to solve problems is ask a better quality of question. Ask yourself, how can I turn this around? How can I utilize this situation? What have I already learned from this? What could I learn from this if I really wanted to? What is the advantage of this situation if I look at it in another context? What's actually funny about this? So if you ask yourself that question enough, you may come up with an answer. Or maybe a question like, will this problem even matter 10 years from now? See, questions can help you to change the way you feel and therefore the way you deal with problems. And questions are the source of answers. If you want to solve problems and you haven't solved one, you haven't asked the right question yet. Keep changing the questions you ask until you come up with a question that makes sense, one that'll make you feel better, but also one that'll get you to act in a way that creates a solution. And thirdly, if we want to handle problems, one of the things we have to do is change the language we use. Now, I've used the word problems many times here. I don't usually use it. I'm using it to get your attention because I think most people use the word problems. 90% of the time when I talk about a problem, I talk about it as a challenge. Now, that seems so simplistic. Does it really work? Does it really have an impact? Well, think about this. The language you use to describe the way you feel determines the way you feel. I teach something now called transformational vocabulary. It's a title for something I came up with when I was sitting in a meeting and I noticed that something happened that affected three people in the room, of which I was one of them. But all three of us responded totally differently to the exact same situation. One person went into rage. I got really angry. And the third person, they were basically annoyed. Now, that's a pretty radical difference since we're all equally impacted by the situation that had occurred. What I noticed was we all had a different emotional response to the same situation, and part of the reason clearly was we had a different label to describe our emotion. That is, we were all feeling these sensations coming into our body, but then when we try to describe it to ourselves, one person said, I'm in rage. I said, I'm angry. The other person said, I'm annoyed. And I thought, what if I would have said, this experience annoys me? And I began to giggle a little bit. I thought, annoys me? That's not a very intense emotion. And I thought, isn't that interesting? What if from now on, when I start to get angry, I said, I'm annoyed? And I realized I've done that for years because instead of calling things problems, I call them challenges. See, if you got a problem, it makes you emotionally feel like there's a weight on your shoulders. There's something that's in your way. But if you got a challenge, that gives you another sense of meaning about it. A challenge is usually associated with something positive. Something's going to make you grow. Something's going to expand. So I think it's a more accurate description of what problems are. Challenges. And the truth of the matter is, you can take a challenge and turn it into an opportunity. If someone comes along and says, we got an opportunity here, it totally changes the way you feel, totally changes the way you focus your mind, totally changes your approach. So if you look at something and say, what's the opportunity in this? You can find that it can be handled more quickly. Now, it's sometimes hard to go from feeling like you got a problem to feeling like you got an opportunity in one breath. It can be done. It can be done just by disciplining your own emotion. But as a very minimum, you can certainly go from we got a problem to we got a challenge here. And maybe even an opportunity if we find a way to use it. And what that does is it makes your brain begin to look for solutions, look for opportunities. And you got to remember, whatever you focus on in life, whatever you ask for, you'll get more of. If you keep asking, why isn't this working? You'll get more reasons why it's not working. If you begin to ask, hey, what's the potential opportunity? And you keep asking, asking shall receive. I know I've said it a bunch of times, but remember, repetition is the mother of skill. If you're good at anything, it's because you've done it a few thousand times. Remember what I said earlier on the other tape? I asked most people, are you confident in tying your shoes? 90% of the population says yes. 10% still not confident in that area, believe it or not. And they say yes. And I say, how come you're confident? Because you've done it a few billion times. The few billion times reminding yourself to change the meaning of what problems are by calling them challenges or opportunities, as simplistic as that is, can make a difference. It can give you the emotional edge in turning things around. And the truth is, you can know that problems are opportunities. You can know it just by looking around and studying life, studying your own life as well as other people. Every convenience you and I have today is the result of somebody who took a problem, made it a challenge inside their head to solve that problem, and as a result, they really created an opportunity for all of us. Classic example I was reading about the other day is the gentleman who started Xerox. You know why Xerox machines were ever made, why they were built? Because the gentleman who created Xerox was a transcriptionist, and he got arthritis, and it was too painful. So in order to solve that problem, he came up with this study, the research that generated the Xerox machine. And by the way, nobody wanted to buy it at first. That was a new problem he had to solve, thing called marketing. Also, I can tell you, if you've got quote-unquote financial problems, what you may have is financial opportunities. But they only become an opportunity when you convert it from a problem to realizing it's a challenge. As you begin to solve that challenge, you'll discover you've got an opportunity to really grow to a whole other level economically. That's what we teach in Financial Destiny. In fact, what I've been doing is studying some of the most successful financial people in the world. I'm going to be interviewing John Templeton, probably one of the best money managers in the world. And the other one I'm working on getting an interview with right now is Peter Lynch. Peter Lynch ran the Magellan Fund, probably one of the most successful funds in the U.S. What people around Peter Lynch say is that he loves it when there's quote-unquote problems in the stock market. Because as soon as people start thinking, boy, there's a problem in the stock market, what do? They freak out and they decide to sell. And sure enough, many times the stock can plummet. And as it plummets, what Peter looks at is, what is it really worth? Is this a real problem or is this an imagined problem? Is this a temporary problem or a long-term problem? If it's an imagined problem or if it's a short-term problem and he knows the organization has solutions to back it up, that's when he goes and buys his favorite stock. He buys it wholesale and waits for everybody else to realize there's no problem, and then he turns around and sells it later on retail and makes a profit. You got to realize problems hold within them incredible opportunities, but you'll never even notice them unless you change the way you language what they are for you as well. Let's go to step number four. Number four is, if you want to change how you feel about a problem, change the way you're using your body. What do I mean by that? Well, if you've studied any of my other work, you know that the way you feel moment to moment determines how you behave. If you're feeling physically tired, wiped out, frustrated, angry, hurt, that translates in the way you hold your body, the way you stand, the way you breathe, the way you gesture, even your tone of voice begins to change when you feel frustrated or overwhelmed, and it changes the way you are. But if you want to change the way you feel, the quickest way to do that is instantly change the way you're using your body. A clapping of the hands, a moving, a getting up and taking a walk, a stroll, a run, a bounce on your rebounder, a huge deep breath in with an explosive breath out, saying the word yes with some power while you make a strong gesture. Anything that makes a radical change in the way you're using your physical body, the pace at which you're moving, the pace at which you're speaking, will instantly change the way you feel. And I'm sure you've found that when you're really exhausted, I don't know about you, but I know when I'm physically wiped out, boy, problems seem a lot bigger, don't they? I mean, when you're really at the edge, let's say you've got physical pain in your body, aren't things that normally don't bother you at all, aren't they huge? I know I found myself sometimes snapping at people in the old days when it really wasn't about them. It was that I was in physical pain in my body. I was stressed. And what I found is what I got to do is change the way I'm using my body, change my breathing pattern, take a nice deep breath, take a little walk or a stroll and come back, and I can handle the problem a lot quicker. So if you're having trouble, if you're starting to feel quote unquote stuck, get out of that state by changing the way you're using your body. That's key number four. Key number five, be honest about the problem. And I've already kind of related to this, but it's a good thing to remind yourself. Don't pretend it's not there. See, I used to be the kind of person that in my business, I didn't want to know about the problems. I was out there busy trying to help people. Gosh, if I have to think about these problems too, I'm going to be overwhelmed. And that's how I got in the position where this $190,000 thing happened, where somebody embezzled all this money. I'm still finding out things because I didn't want to look at reality, because I didn't want to have to deal with the problem. I just wanted to pretend it wasn't there. Be honest with yourself. If there's a problem, face it and handle it. And the way to do it's real simple. Number one, see it as it really is. Don't kid yourself, be accurate. Don't see it worse than it is though either. That's a great way to overwhelm yourself. And secondly, see it better than it is. See, take a look at what it can become. Become a possibility person about the situation. Ask yourself, if I turn this thing around, how could it benefit me? If we turn this thing around, how could it make it stronger or better? If I'd already turned it around, how did I do it? And then the third key is, once you've seen it how it is and you've seen it better than it is, then make it the way you now see it. Make it better than it is. Take those actions that are necessary, realizing it may be small steps at first, but if you make any progress towards solving a problem, you'll get momentum. And momentum will carry you, and all of a sudden you'll come up with bigger and better solutions, till pretty soon that problem really is an opportunity. Key number six to solving problems is simple. Control the focus of your mind. Now, questions are one of the best ways to do this, but here's a ratio that I've used for years in solving problems. Very simple. Think of it this way. If you got a problem, spend 20% of your time on the problem, 80% of your time on the solution. If you find anybody who's got a problem that persists over and over again, they can't come up with a solution, I can tell you why right now. Most of the time is they violated all the things we've talked about so far. They have a horrible attitude about it. They're angry. They think, my gosh, I'm not the source of the problem. How come I have to solve it? Which makes them angry. It doesn't lead them to the solution. They're asking lousy questions of themselves. They're in a situation where they look at it as this big problem that's outside their control. And they're in a position where they aren't changing the way they feel physically. They're just getting more and more angry. They're stuck in one position, storing up all that negative emotion. They're not being honest with themselves. They're trying to pretend like it's not there, or they're trying to say it doesn't have to be dealt with, or somebody else should deal with it. Problems don't go away until we take responsibility. But the key is, if you want to turn it around, those people that aren't turning around, they're focusing on the problem 80% of the time, or 90, and only 10 or 20% of the time on the solution. Turn this ratio around. See, the best way to handle a problem is focus continuously, once you've defined it, on what is the solution. I have a strategy I call decimate a problem. The way you decimate a problem is you take out a journal or a chalkboard or some poster paper, and you get a bunch of people in the room, and you sit down, which is what we did today, and you brainstorm like crazy, what are solutions to this problem? What are 100 ways to destroy this problem? We go after the problem like it's our prey. We're the hunters. We're not being hunted by the problem. We're in charge. We're in control. Tell me 100 ways we're going to destroy this problem. And what we begin to do is brainstorm. Now, here's the key. If you start to write down an idea like, well, here's one way to deal with it, and then you go, no, that's not going to work, you'll never get to the solution. If you want to decimate a problem, then what you've got to do is just brainstorm like crazy and know that maybe 90% of your ideas, maybe 50%, maybe 10%, I don't know, but a large percentage of them aren't going to be worth a darn. They're not going to solve the problem. But don't judge your ideas. First, get them out. Because when you've got 100 ways to destroy a problem up on the board, some of those ideas may not work, but as you look at them, you come up with an even better idea. So take out your journal and decimate the problem by focusing on the solution for a good 20 minutes straight, just brainstorming, keeping the pen going, not allowing yourself to stop and analyze your solution, just one after another after another. And even if you think you've already solved the problem, decimating the problem is more than solving it. Because as you now come up with 100 ways to deal with it, you'll come up with solutions to future problems. You'll start coming up with things you never thought of before. If you start to feel overwhelmed by problems, realize this, you're probably over-chunked. What do I mean by that? I mean you need to chunk things down. You're trying to solve too many problems at one time. Stop and look at one possible solution for one area of the problem. See, that's critical. Sit down and define the problem and then spend 80% of your time focusing on the solution. But as you do it, focus on one aspect of the problem. And what's several solutions to that one aspect? What's another aspect of the problem? What are several solutions to it? Sometimes you try and solve the whole problem all at once, you're going to have a challenge. But you won't have any challenge if you chunk it down. That's a critical strategy for dealing with problems. Here's key number 7. Number 7 is anticipate problems. Anticipate them. Be ready for them in advance. Does that mean you should walk around looking for problems, expecting them? No. You want to expect the best and plan for the worst. If there's anything I've learned being in business, and business is a great microcosm for life because it magnifies things, you get feedback a lot quicker. And fortunately, I've learned how to really succeed in there. But what I've really learned is I can't just solve problems. If we're really going to be effective, got to anticipate them. Now, not being negative, not being wrong, just saying, what could possibly be screwed up here? What could probably get messed up? If something was going to get screwed up, what would most likely go out? And how can we deal in advance so it never even has to happen? See, what you're really doing is you're anticipating what a problem is for a few moments and then coming up with a bunch of solutions before it happens. See, then you can have a lot less problems. Are you going to rid yourself of them completely? Of course not. But you can limit the number of them and hopefully get to the point where you get a better quality of problem, which is one of our goals, to increase the quality of the problems, not to get rid of them, so that we're constantly expanding, so that we can deal with almost anything that used to drive us nuts. Now it's easy to do. Now we've got the muscle to handle that easily. We just want to keep expanding. What do I mean by this? Well, in my companies, we have a set of what we call organizing principles. What they are strategies that help us to eliminate most of the problems we used to have to deal with. In fact, having these strategies today have turned us around. It took us from where we were almost bankrupt into the largest personal development firm of its type in the United States today. We went from being in the hole to a company that do almost $50 million in sales. That kind of turnaround happens because you have strategies that make sense. And I'll tell you the critical strategy, and it's the same as number 7 here. We look at in advance, what are some of the challenges that could possibly come up? Let's be positive, but let's also be real. And as we do that, we say, okay, what's our plan for handling it if it comes up? We don't stop there, though. We say, if that plan doesn't work, what's our backup plan to it? And then we say, if that backup plan didn't work, what would be our third backup plan? Because you know something? I don't care how positive you and I are going to be. There are going to be times when your plans, your best laid plans, aren't going to work. So you got to have a backup plan. And there are going to be times when that falls through also. If you got 3 backup plans, you're on track. And I'll tell you, I learned this from a very, very successful businessman. And his attitude was, listen, you need at least 3 check and balance systems. He's in our country, we're supposed to have 3, and it doesn't seem to be quite enough. If you could get 4, that'd be even better. So I think this is a critical strategy for handling problems. Anticipate them in advance and have 2 or 3 backup plans, solutions, so that if one fails, there's one right behind it to step in and solve things for you. Again, if you do this, you're going to find you're going to eliminate most of the problems that you've been dealing with up until now. Here's key number 8. And this may be the most important key, well, at least one of them. You must develop certainty. Now, let me repeat that. You must develop certainty that you can handle almost any problem, no matter what happens. Now, remember that word certainty. It's the thing that so many human beings are seeking. See, people want to feel certain that they can deal with what comes up in their life. In fact, in order to remain feeling certain, what many people do is they stay in a situation that they hate. For example, I often see people in a relationship, and they really aren't happy together. They aren't working on even making their relationship better. They dislike each other. They're making zero progress, but they'll stay in a relationship 10, 15, 20 years. Why would they do that? And the answer I found is that when you talk to these people, they say, well, I really should leave the relationship, but I guess I think about what if I leave this relationship and then I never start another one, I never meet anybody else. Yeah, I'm unhappy, but at least I've got a relationship. At least I come home and I feel certain this person is here. Even if we fight, at least they're here. See, they'd rather deal with painful certainty than the ultimate pain of uncertainty. Because people are afraid when they're not sure what's going to happen, it could be worse than it is, and they hang on to what they've got. Doesn't make any sense, but it's the way human beings very often operate. So how do we feel certain? Well, a lot of us try and get ourselves to feel certain by working really, really hard. But is it possible to work really, really hard and then still have a problem come up and change things overnight? Is it possible, for example, to work your whole life, build a beautiful home for yourself and your family, and then one day have an earthquake take it away? If you doubt it, ask anybody in San Francisco. You know what's interesting? I think it's fascinating to look at how different people respond to a catastrophe like that. Some people use it in a way that totally disempowers themselves. Others use it as a way that makes their whole life and relationship and family closer. I do a lot of seminars in the Bay Area, and I've talked to a lot of people that went through the experience, and it's really fascinating to see how their lives have been altered by the experience. Some of them have taken that experience and said, "See, I can never be certain of anything again. Why even try? I could do everything right. It still turns up wrong. See, there's no reason to go on." And what a lot of them have done is they've taken that one problem and allowed that one problem to devastate their life and their family. Other people took the experience and said, "You know what it did? It made us unbelievably appreciative of the more important things in life. That problem of watching our house crumble down brought us together because the first thing we thought to ourselves is, thank God we have each other. Thank God none of us got killed or hurt. Our whole family is here." And what it's done is it's reoriented us to not so much things in our lives, but to the most important things of all, our relationship. "You can't believe what's happened. I'm so much closer to my son now. We're making a difference. My daughter is doing better in school. Her grades have gone up since the earthquake just because we have bonded so much as a family." Isn't it interesting how two different people can take the same problem and convert it into something different? They have used it to create more certainty. They feel more certain that they're going to experience more of the joy they want in their life because they used it in a way that has enhanced their feelings. See, one way to create certainty that a lot of people go for is money. And one of the reasons we created the Financial Destiny Seminar is to help people have that certainty. Because most people in life, they really want to be financially free, but they have no plan. Their plan for investing is they run out and they hear a stock tip from a friend and they invest. And they wonder why they got some challenges. Or they run out there and they try and find out from somebody else, how do you get rich overnight? And they join some organization and try and sell a product, but they don't have a plan on what to do with the money they make. And then, of course, you've got the more sophisticated investor who knows everything, and they invest very, very powerfully. But what they find out in the end is they go for this great growth, and many times what happens is they lose their principal and they wonder why they're still far behind. What we found is that what people need is a sensible plan, a plan they could count on. And it creates a tremendous feeling of certainty because people know what they're going to do. But what makes the plan work best is people know what to do when the problems come up. See, you can have a great plan, but if you don't have solutions when the problems come up, no matter how good the plan is, you got a problem. That's why we formulate that plan for people in a way that they are certain they're going to succeed. But even beyond that, the ultimate certainty is we get people to realize that no matter what happens, no matter how someone may change a tax law, or no matter how the market may fluctuate, there is still a way to win if you're flexible. How do you get that certainty? Well, some of it will come from experience. And what's interesting is I look back over the last 10 years of my life, I got really clear that no matter what happens, I can deal with it. Because I've had some of the most incredible victories and I've had some of the most unbelievable defeats. But out of all of them, I've managed to turn them around. See, the key is not do you get knocked down. The key is how quickly do you bounce back up. And not just bounce back up without thinking, but bounce back up with some knowledge and with a lesson you can utilize so that in the future you don't have to trip over the same obstacle. Instead, what you do is you hop above it. Or you go around it, or you learn to utilize it as something that can assist you in building steps to the level you want to achieve. I got a question for you. How would you feel if you were absolutely certain that no matter what happened, you could turn things around? If you knew that someone could throw any problem they want at you and it would bounce off you, kind of like Superman, right? The bullets just bounce off. Nothing was going to penetrate the quality of your emotional life, that you could deal with anything and make it work. How would that make you feel as a person? I can tell you that inside, and there are times when it wavers, I'll be honest with you, but 99.9% of the time in my life, I know I can turn around. And that 0.1% of the time when I fall off the wagon, all I do is do the things I taught you. Change my state. Change the way I'm using my body. Ask myself a better question and get back on track. How do I have that level of certainty that makes me feel like I can deal with anything? Well, part of it is because I've had a lot of pain. I've been through the most challenging times and I've turned it around because I didn't give up, because I didn't ask, why is this happening to me? I asked, what's the solution? How do we turn this around? Not only how do we turn this around, how do we turn this around and make it even better than it was before? By using the very things I've talked to you about, I've created enough experiences that I can feel certain. It's kind of like a tabletop. I've got legs to the tabletop called references. That is experience after experience that now makes that tabletop feel solid, like it can stand on its own. And I've worked at creating those references. I'll give you an idea of what I mean. If you really wanted to, Could you come up with references, that is memories, experiences you've had, to back up the idea that people are basically mean and ornery and they'll take advantage of you if you give them an opportunity? I bet you do. Do you also have references that could back up the idea that people are basically good, that they're honest, that if you give them half a chance, they'll really work to support you too? Don't you have experiences that would back that up and make that feel solid as well? Then the key, I think, is to look at our life and practice what I call memory management. To remember the memories, the experiences we've had that back up the ideas that make us feel certain, that allow us to know we can deal with whatever comes up. I'll give an example. It's interesting, I find, that how after a birthday with a zero on the end, we tend to reevaluate our lives a little more closely, as if it has any more meaning. For some reason in our culture, we tend to do that. At least I did, I'll just say that. And what I did is, fortunately, I've kept journals for years. And in those journals, I basically have recorded my life. I'm a big believer that if your life's worth living, it's worth recording. So I've got in there my goals from years ago. I've got in the challenges that came up, the solutions I came up with, the things I learned from books and tapes and people and situations. My journals are an incredible set of resources that I can tap into at any time. Plus, they show me how I've grown. And what's interesting is I took my journals and I went back to when I was 20 years old. And then I extended it all the way back to 17. And I created for myself a large chart. And on it, I put the months of the year from the top, from January to December. And then across the page, horizontally, I put each of the years. And in each month, what I did is I reviewed my journal. I wrote down key events that happened in my life, whether they be good, bad, or indifferent. As I went through and created this chart, I got an incredible experience. I realized that I had been through heck and back, and that through all those experiences, I had turned it around, and I could see them there in front of me. It was different than just knowing inside my head. What it did is it gave me literally dozens and dozens and dozens of legs to back up the idea that no matter what happens, I'll find a way to make it work. I always have, and I always will. When you believe that in your gut, it gives you a power in dealing with problems that few people have. It gives you the emotional freedom, the sense of internal knowing that says no matter what occurs, I'm in charge. Gosh, it's an incredible feeling, and it's one you deserve. And so when you're done with this tape today, that's going to be your major assignment. Your major assignment is to at least begin creating a chart of the memories of your life for the last 10 years, where you're going to begin to fill in and maybe even talk to some other people around you. Because when this chart is complete, you'll find you won't be fearful of problems. Instead, what you'll do is you'll get excited about them. Because as I look back, I can see how some of those things that looked like problems led to some of the things that I now value most. See, what seems like a problem may actually be a gift. We just got to be willing to see that process. And as I looked over my life, I could see tons of these gifts. I could really see that these problems had enhanced my life, and I could see where it made changes and who I've become as a person. So when this tape is done, that's going to be your major assignment. You're going to want to take out a piece of paper and draw yourself the beginnings of a chart. You'll write down January through December, vertically from top to bottom, and horizontally, you're going to write the years. Do a 10-year chart. And when you're done with that, gradually, over the next few days, take some time, some concentrated time, maybe 30 minutes, maybe even an hour, to think about where you were at different months, different years, different experiences that have significantly affected you, both positive ones and also ones that seem negative at the time. And when you see them in context, when you look back, two things will happen. One, you'll say, man, I can survive anything. I've been through the tough times. I don't have to wonder whether I can do this. I've already handled those kinds of situations before. And two, it'll give you unbelievable certainty about your future. See, history provides for us a way to feel certain. I remember years ago when I was in junior high school, that's when we had the oil crisis. All of a sudden, we were in a situation where I didn't even have a driver's license yet, and I was beginning to wonder, gosh, would I ever get one? That was my big problem. Would I ever be able to drive a car? And what was interesting, I had a teacher that told us something I never forgot. He said, you know, young man, something you should remember. Human beings always solve the problems when they get big enough, when it's important enough. Necessity is the mother of invention. He said, don't worry about the oil crisis. He said, we'll find a way to turn the thing around, or we'll find a better solution. And then he read me this article, and it sounded like it was out of the newspaper that day, and it described how the whole world was going to go dark because oil wasn't available anymore, because we're running out of oil. You know what the oil was? Whale oil. Interesting. It was written in the 1800s. And he began to laugh as he read it to me, and I began to laugh too when I realized, hey, the bottom line is human beings are resourceful to always find a way. We need to realize we are human beings. We always will find a way and feel the certainty that allows us to know no matter what happens, we're in charge, and to take worry and put it in its rightful place. Set it aside. Concerns one thing, worries another. Take charge of your life, handle problems from a state of certainty, and you'll come up with much better solutions. And let's go to our last three points. Number 9, learn to solve problems, not just so you don't have any more problems, but so you attract a better quality of problem. See, I've talked about that, and you've heard me relate that several times. What do I mean by a better quality of problem? What I mean is, your goal is not to not have problems. We've established that over and over again, because I really want that repetition to hammer inside your mind till you remember it, till it sticks with you. But in addition to that, a better quality of problem really means this. At one time in your life, you probably were struggling to figure out a problem and how to solve it, like how to pay the lousy bills. See, that's a pretty lousy problem. And if you focus on that, you're only going to get solutions on doing that. Till one day you say, I want a better problem. And the better problem is, how do I make enough money so I can take care of my family? How do I make enough money so I can contribute to my favorite charity? How do I make enough money that I can make a difference? How do I make enough money that I can influence the political process? See, when you ask those questions, you get a better quality of answer because you're asking and solving a better quality of problem, one that's going to expand you. See, as a society, we've had to deal with some of these problems. We have problems all around us, but they're better than they used to be a couple hundred years ago. A couple hundred years ago, we're trying to figure out how to extend the length of someone's life. We're trying to figure out how to get somebody where they didn't have to work 24 hours a day so they could just eat. Today, that's no problem. Eating is no problem. Notice how many fat people you see around you. Right? We have no problem doing that. Our problem is we've created a technology that has made it so much easier for man to do things that a lot of us spend most of our time in a sedentary fashion. Even when we're working, we think we're working hard and we're sitting there at our computer. Boy, those fingers are working really hard. See, the reality is we have to deal with the problem of all these degenerative diseases. And they're the result of us creating a solution to an old problem. So all we do is we now focus on something else. How do we increase our health, our vitality, and our energy while we simultaneously develop the technology that frees up more and more of our time? And for a lot of our youth, we've got to solve the problem of how do we get them to expand emotionally? How do we get them to have a spiritual path? How do we get them to make a difference when a lot of our youth are living in an environment where they can have virtually any choice met, where it doesn't take a lot of effort, where they literally expect instantaneous gratification? You and I have to figure out how to solve that problem so that our kids develop the emotional, spiritual, and physical muscles that allow them to compete and succeed. See, that's a new problem, a better quality problem, a problem that kind of inspires you. See, Einstein asked some interesting questions. He solved some problems. And in solving those problems, he may have created some additional ones that affect the entire human race. See, when we solve a problem, it doesn't end. We just come up with a better quality of one. And so we don't want to hide out from them. We want to seek them out. Focus on the solutions to the most important problems, not just the urgent ones. And you'll find out some of these little problems will just drop aside. You'll handle them easily. In addition, one of the most disempowering beliefs you can create for yourself is that things are outside your control. They're absolutely within your control the moment you decide to take responsibility. Now think of this word responsibility. Responsibility for most people is this big, heavy thing, just like problems. But the reality is responsibility, the ability to respond, comes when you take charge. When you say there is no problem that's too big, I don't care if it was somebody else's problem, I don't care if it was somebody else's challenge, I'm going to take control of it and turn it around because I want the muscle anyway. See, if you keep focusing on how you shouldn't have to deal with this, how it's somebody else's problem, the problem won't get solved, you'll just get more upset, and you'll find yourself in a position where the problem gets bigger, where all of a sudden it begins to affect you and create even more pain in your life. Just handle it. Point number 10 on having problems is this. Remember, you have no problems. You say, wait a second, you just spent 40 minutes talking to me all about problems. And you told me over and over again I should see them as challenges and solutions and all these different things. You told me how to deal with them. Now you're saying there's no problems? You're right. Develop a new belief. You have no problems. If you think you have problems, all you got to do is start comparing and contrasting with people in worse shape. You think you have problems? I suggest you take a trip to the morgue. You may discover you don't have any problems. A friend of mine is the chief psychologist at Bellevue. And oftentimes I've talked to people in seminars about how it's really valuable in life, not just to talk about another experience, but to go have it, to expose yourself to things, both positive and negative, that'll help you to appreciate your life more. And he decided to take some of his key psychologists and psychiatrists down to the morgue to have an experience, an associated experience of what death is like, so maybe they'd appreciate life a little more. And I'll tell you what, he took me on the same trip, and I will never forget it. I remember going in the hospital, and as we were going down the elevator to go into the basement, I remember looking around at some of these people that looked so sickly and they looked so horrible, and I felt really bad for them. And after going to the morgue and having them open drawer after drawer and experiencing death in a different way than just how I think about it, like graduation, like moving on to what I believe may be a better experience. And many people believe what I believe in that area. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But the point is this. When I stood there with these persons' bodies right there, I realized I'm more than my body. Because you know what? They weighed the same, but there was no experience of a human being being there. And I looked at one gentleman, he opened the drawer, and the man was my age, at the time 29. He was full of bullet holes. It was an unbelievable experience. He told me not to talk while I was down there, to just experience whatever I felt, and we'd talk about it later on. He wanted me not to blow off steam by talking or distracting myself. It impacted me emotionally. And I could tell you a lot about it, but in the moment I have left with you, I just tell you this. When I got back on the elevator, I looked at some of those same sickly people, and I realized they don't have any problems. I looked at some of those people who looked terrible, and all of a sudden they looked young and healthy, by contrast. I looked at my own life and realized I don't have any problems, and neither do you. You think you got problems? Remember, problems are a sign of life. If you don't have any problems, that's the only real problem I know of. If you got problems, you're healthy. Your key is utilize them, take advantage of them in so many ways as we've talked about, and realize how lucky you are to have this thing called problems. If you're not in the morgue, if you got your family, if you got your friends, if you have any portion of your health, if you can open your eyes in a free world and not worried about a soldier walking in telling you what to do, then obviously you don't have any problems. Might be good for us to remember. Here in America, we oftentimes lose perspective. It's real useful to realize how lucky we really are. And I met with the ambassador from Hungary and the ambassador of Poland. Talking to them and listening to the challenges they have in their life to try and turn things around, they have a major set of problems. They have products that, by their own description, no one else would buy, because by Western standards, we would never buy the products. They got some major problems. Just getting the communist system out is not enough. They now got to solve a better quality problem. How do you take an economy that was controlled by the government and convert it to a free market system? See, we have a lot of things already in place that most people would beg for. They're going to go through a lot of pain before that occurs. We don't have any problems. Stock market goes down, that's not a problem. You know, do people lose money when the stock market goes down? Not always. See, a lot of people say, gosh, when the stock market crashed, boy, that was a big problem. Well, yes and no. Some people bought on that day and did pretty well. Some people didn't sell on that day. So what they lost was on paper. And a lot of those people have hung on to things. They didn't get fearful of problems. They saw that the companies they'd invested in were still strong, and many of those are in better shape than before. They didn't lose any money even though the stock market crashed. See, the appearance of a problem does not mean you need to go run. And again, maybe it's not a problem at all. Look at problems more closely, and it might be useful to operate from the frame, there are no real problems for me. There might be challenges, there might be opportunities, but I don't have any real problems. And our final point, point 11, is real simple. Don't just solve problems. Take pride in solving them. Take pride in the result that problems create. Stop every now and then and take a look at something that once was a problem and now has shaped you for the better. Look at what you've done in your life. Look at the things you've solved and give yourself credit for who you've become as a person. Just remember, in the end, what you get in your life is not going to make you happy anyway. Who you become as a human being is the ultimate gift or the ultimate pain. If we utilize our problems effectively, we can become the kind of person that we're proud of. And when we come to the end of our life, we won't say, gosh, I wish I woulda or I shoulda. We won't feel like we only live 1/10 of our life. We'll stand tall and know that we live life fully, that we took these things we call problems and turned them into opportunities, and that we took this experience, this gift we call our lives, and we made it an adventure that we'll never forget. Hey, remember, problems are your friends. They're not your foes. So between now and next month when we get together, go solve some problems. Go develop some muscles. Go give yourself an emotional and spiritual workout. And come back next month so you and I can celebrate together. Looking back on 30 days and saying, you know, I tackled some of those things I was putting off, some of those things I was angry about. I didn't want to deal with them. I didn't feel like it was my problem, but I did it anyway. And notice how it makes you feel. And make sure you do our assignment. Create that chart over the next 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 days, maybe the next week, where you can look at the last decade of your life and realize there's no problem too big for you. You can deal with whatever comes up. And the bigger the problem is, the more you become as a person. And that every day all you're doing is learning so you don't have to repeat the problems and getting yourself ready for a better quality of problem. And by the way, speaking of problems, if you want to not just avoid them but take advantage of them, be sure to listen to the interview this month with Harry Dent. If you're not familiar with Harry by name, you probably have heard about his work. See, Harry wrote a book called The Great Boom Ahead in 1991. If you remember, this was the middle of recession in the United States, and he's talking about how we're just about to have the greatest boom in economic history. Well, when I read this, I thought this guy's crazy. But as I continue to read, he wasn't just some economist from Harvard. He certainly has the Harvard MBA in the background. He was an economist who understood the driving force that controls everything this country buys, eats, and does. It was an understanding of how the generation that we're in is affecting the economy and will continue to do so. And what I mean by that is the predominant generations of the baby boom generation and the generations that will follow, whether it be Generation X or Generation Y. The point of the matter is, by these understandings, he predicted that the Dow, which in those days was around 3,300, would be at a minimum of 8,500 by the year 2000. Now, anybody heard this just laughed. I mean, again, this guy's insane. He said, that's a conservative estimate. He said, I really believe, based on these projections, and he showed them that the Dow would be at above 10,000. Well, the rest is history. Harry Dent is an extraordinary man with extraordinary insight. You don't have to be an investor to find enormous value in what he's going to share. If you want to avoid problems, the best way is to anticipate what's coming so that other people's problems are your opportunities. So be sure to listen and take advantage of all the tools. We've created all three tools each month for you as a way of reinforcing your experience. A message from me, an interview with a person of power so you can learn their key strategies and distinctions, and a summary of some of the best books. Hopefully you'll pick up the books as well so you make some additional distinctions. Also, remember the power of repetition. Hearing an idea again increases your chances of really using it. So take advantage of this material. I want to thank you again for taking the time to visit with me. I really enjoy the opportunity to develop this relationship with you. I may not know you personally, but somehow I feel like I do, and I hope the feeling is mutual. And I'm looking forward to our relationship continually expanding. Till next month, have fun, solve problems, and let's live with passion.